Hi, it's Grace, and this is a special series of Frogmore Stew called Meal Prep. The politicians that run our state government are essentially the ingredients that make up the stew that is our state. And by getting to know each of the folks running for State House and State Senate, we hope to offer you a window into what we as the voters will determine the final recipe to be. Caitlin, TJ, and I took on the task of interviewing as many of the people running for those seats as we could. The interviews offer us a more personal look at the variety of people who want us to send them to Columbia. We learned a lot. We hope you do too.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Harold Gettings, welcome to Frogmore Stew. This is Caitlin. How are you today?
I am excellent. Thanks for asking.
Harold, when we were doing research to invite everybody to talk about who they are and what they believe, we noticed that you are running for both the State House of Representative District 93 and the State Senate District 26 as a Workers' Party candidate. Can you talk to me about why you're running for both?
It just comes down to a question of who we'd be running against. South Carolina's districts are just such gerrymandered messes. They're drawn up to ensure one party or another actually wins their particular districts. So what we and all of our candidates decided to do is we just double file for both our House and our Senate races, because that's a thing you can do in South Carolina, and then wait for the major parties to have their primaries to see who it is we would actually be running against. And we'll all make our decisions then based on those results to decide which race to stay in and which ones to drop out of.
So in both of those districts, you would be running against the current incumbent.
In both of my districts, those are going to be open seats, because Russell Ott, he's not running for re-election in the House because he's trying to run for that Senate district. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the Senate side, Nikki Setzler is retiring. That's going to be an open seat all the way around. So it's Russell Ott and Dick Harpootlian are running on the Democratic side, and then there's some Republicans trying to run as well. So
what do you think you've done to feel prepared to run for state legislature?
What I've done is basically spend my entire life being working class. I was raised in Barnwell County, South Carolina, by my grandparents, dad of whom worked at Savannah Riverside for 35 years. After high school, I worked a variety of food service and just service sector type jobs. I went to college, studied political science, and spent a number of years in the Democratic Party payroll as a field organizer, traveled all over the country doing that. Then became a union construction worker for 10 years. After medical issues forced me to stop doing that, I became an Uber Eats driver and have been doing that ever since. I would like to think I've got a unique perspective coming into this, both as a political insider and just a general working class guy. I understand the working class because that's who I am. I understand how the decisions made in Columbia affect those of us out here on the street, and I think I am fully prepared to give voice to that in the event that I get elected. So
in both of the races, as we talked about, the current incumbent, although they're not running for either of their seats, are both Democrats. Why, given your relationship with the Democratic Party, wouldn't you have run as a Democrat?
The number one being the whole filing fee issue. Running third party means I don't have to pay those. And second of all, not to put too fine of a point on it, but no matter how corrupt you think our political system actually is, I can tell you as an insider, it's worse. I could not in good conscience continue to play into a system that's basically telling those of us in our generation to sit down, shut up, and wait our turn.
That then leads me to my next question, which is your districts, and let's just say both of them. The Senate does include a little bit of the city of Columbia, but it's basically between Columbia and Orangeburg. What do you think the biggest issue is in that district in particular, whether it's District 93 or District 26?
This is an interesting question in that there are so many different issues and they're all so interconnected. It's hard to address one without addressing everything else that comes into it. Personally, I think the two biggest ones are education and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. The way that we currently fund our education system is absolutely asinine, and it just ensures that everybody's going to stay exactly where they are in terms of socioeconomic status. If you come from a rich school district, your school district's going to get the best of everything, and you've just given yourself a huge leg up going forward as far as, you know, career goes and everything else. Whereas if you're from one of these rural districts that has very little of a tax base to draw from, you're not going to have nearly the opportunities that the richer school districts will have. And it ensures that you're not going to have the same opportunities either going forward. Looking at the infrastructure issue, I can tell you as an Uber Eats driver, our roads are terrible. It gets really expensive having to get my car realigned every time I need an oil change because I'm running through all the potholes. If you're a potential employer looking to bring in new jobs to this area, where's your incentive to do so when your workforce is uneducated and the roads are terrible to be bringing things in and out of the area? It's, again, just a situation set up for failure. As somebody who's lived this particular experience of my entire life in rural South Carolina, I think it's time somebody gave a voice to that.
Do you think that would translate to the biggest issue statewide, or is there another issue that you think trumps all that at the state level?
All of it winds up being interconnected. I mean, you can't talk about one thing without talking about the other, but I think both of those, as far as the infrastructure and the education, that is the starting point right there. Until we address those, it's going to be really hard to even discuss the rest of it.
What are some of the things that you think are interconnected with infrastructure and education?
Part of the problem with our education system is the fact that it was set up during the era when textiles were king here in South Carolina. We only needed a workforce that was going to be smart enough to push the buttons to keep the machines running. We were set up to accomplish exactly that. Well, the textile mills are all gone. And as far as the manufacturing jobs go, those are always going to go wherever the workforce is cheapest. So we can't count on that bearing all the economic weight going forward. We need, a far more educated workforce that's going to be prepared to face the challenges that this new kind of white collar economy that's growing in is going to need. Until we get out of this mindset that everything's hunky dory, we're not going to get there.
Short of education and obviously having a more educated workforce, what are some of the other things that you think would attract companies with those gray and white collar jobs to South Carolina?
Infrastructure is a big thing for that as well. We're going to need better roads. We're going to need reliable water and power and everything else in order to attract these companies. And we can't do that without an educated workforce and a tax base from which to draw to raise the funds to do all of that.
So if you had a magic wand, what's one policy that you would change immediately if you were elected?
I think the big thing that I would do is just change the way that we're funding our educational system. This whole mandate for a minimally adequate education is not a path forward. We need a more equitable way of funding our educational systems and more opportunities, not just the high school level, not just at the collegiate level, but even in the vocational school level. Again, coming from the construction background that I do, I mean, we have a huge need for qualified welders. We have a huge need for architects, structural engineers, and all kinds of other things that the traditional college system is not going to be really focused on doing, but needs to be addressed to have a more diverse workforce from which to draw.
So we're going to go into the lightning round on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 is if you fully disagree with the current legislation, and 10 is if you fully agree with the current legislation. Where do you sit with current legislation as it pertains to the heartbeat bill or the 6-week abortion ban?
Oh, I'm dead set against the abortion bans as they came into play and as they're currently implemented. Matter of fact, I'm going off on a tangent here and I apologize, but it's just something I need to clarify. Whenever Planned Parenthood or whenever the Women's Rights Empowerment Network were having protests or rallies or anything like that around the state house, it was me that they were calling. It was Gary Vauture they were calling. He's another candidate that I'm working with right now. It should be very clear where we stand on this particular issue.
School vouchers for all.
Oh, terrible idea. That winds up being just this huge giveaway to the rich people who could already afford to send their kids to private school and winds up defunding our public school system in the process and does nothing to actually address the underlying issues.
How about open carry?
I actually heard the interview y'all did with Leon Lott recently regarding that, and I completely agree with him. Law enforcement's against it, and I stand with law enforcement on that particular issue for sure. That was a terrible idea and one that needs to be addressed immediately.
What about the legislation for the transgender care ban for minors?
Here comes another long answer. Be prepared.
Ready.
This is something I need to go ahead and address now before it becomes a campaign issue. I am an occasional drag performer myself. I don't personally identify as transgender, but it's definitely an issue that I care deeply about. The thing is, nobody cared about the transgender community one way or another until the right wing decided to make it an issue, because they're a very small, very marginalized, very powerless little group that, you know, are just easy to scapegoat. Trans people have always existed. They always will exist, and they deserve the same level of rights and respect that everybody else does. As far as transgender care goes, leave the people alone. Let them do what they're going to do. Giving them more rights doesn't take anything away from your own.
How about critical race theory in schools?
Telling the truth about what actually happened as far as history goes is something that needs to be done. Critical race theory is not something that's being taught at the elementary or middle school. That's like a collegiate level thing. In order to do better, we got to know better. So let's tell the truth in the classroom.
How about social emotional learning in schools?
No, this is another thing that wasn't an issue until the right decided to make it one. It seems to be the new buzzword. It used to be they were all mad about Common Core, and then they were all mad about woke, whatever the heck that means. And now they seem to be mad about this. Well, honestly, I had to look into it to figure out what in the devil they were even talking about and what they're so upset about. It's about teaching empathy, which is a fantastic freaking idea. Part of the problem that we're having with violence in schools is the fact that kids aren't being taught this.
All right. How about term limits for state house and state senate?
If I end up running for the Senate side of it, the guy that I will be replacing has been in office longer than I've been alive. The man was first elected in 1976. I wasn't even born until 78. Just look around the state. Look at the state of our roads. Look at the state of our schools. For crying out loud, look at our paychecks. If you've been in office that long, that is your legacy. Imagine if you or I were that bad at our jobs. You think any of us would survive our next performance reviews? No. Incumbency winds up creating this huge shortcut at the ballot box and just ensures that we're never going to see any kind of fresh blood until somebody finally retires or dies. We can address what form this would take going forward, but yeah, this is something that needs to be looked into one way or another.
All right. How judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
There's only two states that do it the same way that we do, because all of our legislators also seem to be lawyers. It creates this huge conflict of interest where they're picking the judges that they're going to have to be facing in the courtroom later. I'm not entirely comfortable with this. And again, not a problem that I'm fully prepared to address, but it's one that I'm willing to acknowledge and entertain potential solutions for.
Harold, if there is one thing that you want the average voter to know about you in your district, what is it?
Okay. Now, I've been given that particular question, and my answer to it is, who founded the Republican Party? The popular answer on that is Lincoln, but no, it was actually founded in 1856, and their first chairman was a guy named Edwin Morgan, who, if you're a huge history buff, you may remember, because he was governor of New York at one point, Union general, but he's not the one that anybody remembers. He's just the one that got the ball rolling, and had he not done what he did, history would not know the name Lincoln, because he wouldn't have had a platform and a party from which to run. That's why the Workers' Party exists. That's why we're doing what we're doing. I don't have any delusions that this is going to be our year, because we've only got four candidates and none of us have any kind of money or name recognition to be running on. We, as a state and a country, are facing a crisis. Like, my generation and the ones that follow it are going to be the first in American history to materially end up worse than the ones that preceded it. And neither of the major parties are willing to address that. So we're out here doing the groundwork that, you know, people like Edwin Morgan and Horace Greeley and John Fremont and Salmon P. Chase and a bunch of other names that nobody remembers, what they were doing in 1856. They're doing the groundwork. They're doing the thankless stuff that nobody's going to remember. So the next generation of leaders that comes along that has the big ideas, that wants to, you know, step forward and solve our problems for us, will have a platform from which to do it. So that's why we're here. That's why we're doing what we're doing.
I appreciate that answer so much. Harold,
well, you know,
honestly,
I was a history minor, so it was my job to know these.
Oh, I see. You got the cheat card.
Yeah, totally.
Harold, this has truly been a pleasure. We'll be in touch before November for sure.
I look forward to talking to you again. I'm a big fan of your podcast, so thanks for having me on.
Today, we are with Krista Hassel. She is running for House District 93, which covers parts of Orangeburg, Calhoun, and Lexington counties. Krista, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about the district that you are running for?
Sure. We are primarily rural areas. We don't have any big municipalities. I live in the town of Ellery. We have about 600 people in the town, small rural communities. Most of the people have been here all their lives, farming families that have been generational farmers. Mm-hmm. And it's a great area. It's super quiet, very little crime in my particular district. We do have some, of course, like everywhere, mm-hmm. but it is a very small, tight-knit area.
That sounds very South Carolina. I love it.
Yes.
And can you tell us in your district what the word on the ground is? What is the number one issue? Is there one that stands out?
There are several issues in our area. I think that probably the biggest issue in our area is we don't want to see overgrowth. Mm. People like their lifestyle. Mm. They like the area. They don't want to see urban sprawl. We don't want to see big industrial. We like our mom and pop stores. Mm. And I think that's probably the biggest issue. We do have some challenges in some of our areas where housing is a concern, affordable housing is a concern. But again, most of the residents here do not want to see that urban sprawl like we've seen many other places in the South Carolina area.
And is your district growing or is it shrinking?
We are growing. It seems as though Charleston is coming this way and Columbia is coming this way. Yes. I had an interesting conversation with our building inspector in the Orangeburg County area back January, and we are slated for about 4,800 homes in our area that had been approved in probably the next 3 years. That's scary to a lot of us because our infrastructure and our essential services just are not up to par. And that's something that we have to address. It's not a situation, if you build it, they will come. We need to make sure that our essential services are where they need to be to support that type of growth.
And there's been a lot of talk throughout the state about the extensive growth that's happening and government not being on the forefront of preparing for that.
Yes. And unfortunately, our roads are failing in this area. Our schools are failing. And we've really got to focus on those aspects before we bring that amount of people to our area. Another thing is our essential services, our first responders. In the town of Ellery, you think we've only got 600 people, but we have two police officers. We have a police chief and we have a deputy. Mm-hmm. And they can't cover 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, with just two law enforcement officials. Right. Our LEOs, our ambulance, our fire, they're overworked and they need to have the support if we're going to have that type of growth in this area.
How is healthcare? I know there's a hospital in Orangeburg. Is that the closest hospital?
That is the closest to the Ellery area. We have a hospital in Manning. We have an urgent care facility in Santee, but they are not open after hours. And they don't really provide the essential services that we need. If somebody breaks a bone, they have to go either to Orangeburg, Lexington, or over to Manning. When you get up into the Sandy Run area of my district and Lexington County, the health care is definitely better. You have more options here in the Ellery, Santee, and this side of Orangeburg. It's a struggle. We have two doctors in the Santee area. We moved my elderly mother in with us about 2 years ago, and we have to go to Charleston or Columbia for her health care.
The primary you're running in, there are a lot of people running. You're the Republican on the ticket, and you do not have a primary. But the other side, there are four Democrats and one Workers' Party. What is going on up there that many people want to run that district?
I think the biggest thing that we have going on is the gentleman that is currently in this seat, Russell Ott, he decided that he was not going to run for this seat again. He made a comment last year that with the redistricting, he felt that the district was going to go more red. He made the decision to run for Senate rather than run again for House of Representatives. And I believe that just opened up the avenue for more people to put their bid in for this position. This particular district has been under the rule of two families for 51 years. And there's not been a whole lot of progress with the essential services that we need. The support for the constituents, the representation for the constituents, listening to what the constituents want and what their expectations are, it's been ignored for a long time. Those are the types of things that I hear. We've been ignored. We need help. We need somebody to represent us the way that we expect them to represent us.
Russell Ott has been in that seat since 2013.
Yes.
Is there anything that he's done that, if elected, you would continue? Or do you think he just hasn't really been hyper-focused on getting the district to where it needs to be?
I believe that the biggest issue with Representative Ott is that follow-up to all of his constituents has not been a priority. There are about 8 of us here in Ellery who have attempted to contact him for about the last year, and none of us have received any responses to our emails, our telephone calls, or our text messages. And that is one of the biggest reasons that I chose to run. We deserve better. If there's a concern, we need to be able to get in touch with someone.
As far as your background, what have you done that you feel has given you some experience to be prepared for this job?
We've been small business owners for a lot of years. I started out when I was in my early 20s, went to cosmetology school in my late teens, opened a hair salon in Mount Pleasant before Mount Pleasant was Mount Pleasant. And I kicked myself in the behind all the time because if I'd have just hung out a little bit longer, the salon really would have been great. But I had a 3,000 square foot salon. It was an 11 station salon, and I was young. We had a toddler at home, had this business, ended up closing the business, and then went and got my paralegal certificate from University of South Carolina, worked in corporate law for several years. I worked for a tax resolution company, and I was in their legal affairs department. It was heart-wrenching to see what some of these folks went through with their taxes. When I saw the things that were happening and the requirements that we as the legal affairs department were made to do that were unethical, it was a tough situation because a lot of times we were told, now you need to skirt over this issue and skirt over that issue. And I got to a point in that career where I couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't protect a company that was not ethical. And I had to step away. I left that job and came to work for my husband in 2006.
And you mentioned the schools in your district are not doing well. Do you think that the state legislature can help get us on the right track?
I feel like one of the biggest things that we need to do is we need to allow our state to work with our schools. My opinion is that the federal government places such stringent requirements on our teachers and our administrators that our teachers aren't allowed to teach. When they have such policies and procedures in place where they can't cater to a specific child's needs, it's tough on them. I still have contact with my third grade teacher because I remember the way that she taught her students, and it was very individualized. She did cater to the needs, and she had that ability to cater to the needs of each of her students. She had a personal relationship with each of the parents. Her name was Donna Claire, and she still is in Somerville. Even in high school, I had a business math teacher, Shirley Dixon. She was absolutely amazing. And she got to know each of her students because she didn't have those stringent requirements where she had to teach every single student the same way. And in South Carolina, we have a lot of rural communities here. And there are many of these kiddos that are not going to go to college. They're going to follow in their mom and daddy's or their granddaddy's footsteps. And they're going to farm or they're going to run the construction company or be an electrician or a plumber. We need to teach some practical math skills, how to balance a checkbook, how to file your own tax return. Those are the things that were important to me when I was in that business math class. And it has helped us in our business. And our teachers need to have a little more control over what they're teaching and how they're teaching.
The incoming people, these 4,800 houses you mentioned that would potentially come in, are the schools prepared to accept that many more children?
The schools right now, their admissions are at their lowest. We have a lot of private schools in our area. And we have a lot of homeschoolers in our area, and we're one of them. We have a 14-year-old daughter, and she spent 3 months in a brick-and-mortar school across the lake at a private school, and it wasn't for our family. The facility, yes, I think it could take on more students. Mm-hmm. Our teachers, not much because we have a staffing shortage.
You were able to have a magic wand on day one. Is there one policy that you would change immediately?
I think probably the biggest issue or the one policy that I would fight for immediately is to have transparency and accountability in our local municipalities. I have seen it across my district and experienced it firsthand in the town of Ellery. We go to the town council meetings and there's not a whole lot of transparency or accountability. Mm-hmm. Our county council and our town council folks tend to vote the way they want to vote and not based on the constituent need and desires and expectations. One of the biggest things that I have focused on is when you are elected in as a representative, whether it's House, Senate, Council, local, town, school board, it doesn't matter. When you are voted in by the constituents to represent them, that's exactly what you should do. It doesn't have anything to do with me holding a title or being in a position. It has everything to do with the servantry of the people that you were elected by. And representing them in a manner in which they expect and deserve.
Let's switch to our lightning round. These are the hot button issues that we wanted to make sure all the candidates were able to let us know where they stand, but we didn't want to get too far into the weeds with these. If one is you disagree and 10 is you agree with either the current legislation or currently proposed legislation. The first one is medical marijuana.
I believe that it should be legal.
How about term limits for state House and state Senate?
We need to have term limits.
Okay. Social emotional learning, diversity, equity, inclusion, what some call critical race theory being taught in schools.
I do not agree.
School vouchers for all.
I agree with it. There has to be some regulation. That's one of those things that I definitely need to dive into. But yes, I do agree with school vouchers.
The heartbeat bill, 6-week abortion ban.
I agree.
Open carry, the constitutional carry.
I agree.
How the judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
I do not agree. We need judicial reform.
That is all the questions I have for you today. Krista, it was great to talk to you.
Nice to talk with you, and thank you very much. I think what you guys are doing is fantastic.
The meal prep's got me all set. The meal prep's got me all set.
Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is a podcast series presented to help you be a more informed voter for South Carolina. We encourage you to verify your voter information and see a sample ballot for your district online at scvotes.gov. Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is hosted by Grace Cowan and Caitlin Brewer, with editing and IT support by Eric Johnson. produced by TJ Phillips for the Podcast Solutions Network.